Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is novelist and educator Kara Hoffman. Hoffman is the author of several novels, including the critically acclaimed So Much Pretty, a beautifully written debut novel that tackled violence in small-town America. Her most recent novel is called Be Safe, I Love You. It was published by Simon & Schuster this month. It takes on the issue of the psychological challenges facing a female soldier returning home from a tour of duty in Iraq. Hoffman has received a number of awards, including a New York State Foundation for the Arts Fellowship, and she currently teaches at Bronx Community College. I'm talking to Kara Hoffman by phone from an office in New York City. Kara Hoffman, welcome to Out of Bounds, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Tish. It's a pleasure to be on.
Now, I obviously want to start with, what was it that attracted you to the story of a woman soldier that made you write this novel?
Well, there were a few things. One, of course, is that the United States has been at war for a very long time, and so just part of writing about the world that we live in is writing about war. And the other thing is, I come from a military family.
Mm.
And so writing about the subject just made a lot of sense to me. My brother was a combat veteran who served two tours of duty in Afghanistan. And I wanted to write about what war is like for families, that it's actually a bigger story, the story of deployment. It doesn't just affect the person who's deployed. It actually affects exponentially more people.
Yeah, it affects communities and immediate families, whole neighborhoods. Now the protagonist in your novel is a working-class woman named Lauren Clay. Tell us about her. Is she based on anybody you knew, or is she a composite of many people that you probably talked to?
I guess you could say she was a composite of characters. I did a lot of research speaking with women veterans while I was writing the book. I mean, she also shares traits with my older brother in that she is sort of a caretaker personality. And when we were young, when my younger brother and I were young, my older brother, who's much older, had gone away, had first enlisted when we were children and come back when we were children. And so I did have experience with that kind of thing.
So she's based on a composite, and perhaps a little bit on your brother. You base this in a working class community too, and Lauren is clearly a working class young woman. Why did you focus on that particular aspect of the culture?
Again, I think that it has to do with the fact that this is the sea in which we swim, so to speak. This is how most of the people in the country live. Working poverty is really more the norm than anything else. The middle class is shrinking. As we know, the one percenters are one percenters. The rest of us often have to have, a couple different jobs to make it. And that was certainly my experience when I was younger and having maybe, one or two different jobs, or being underemployed and being a working mother. I did it because I think it reflects the culture.
Yeah, it does. And, the other point that I hear constantly, too, is the fact that we don't have a draft anymore, and most of the recruits coming from our community are working class because they need the income, they need the training. I'm actually so happy that you focused on that.
Well, thank you. It's interesting, isn't it? Because we say things that we have an all-volunteer army, or that people are not forced to go in the army, but it's quite a different situation if you're really looking at how it is for the people who do enlist. And I teach in the Bronx, and I have many students who are coming back from tours of duty, many students who are going to go on to military service. I have older students who served in the first Gulf War, and some who've even served in Vietnam. And so I'm really able to observe a cross-section of people all coming from what really is the poorest county in New York State, and seeing how many of them have to take on that experience, have to take on a military career when it may not be their first choice.
Yeah.
I would have to say it certainly wouldn't have been their first choice. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is, and it's something that we've read a lot about. We've been at war for over 10 years. We've been in two wars for over 10 years, and people don't talk that much about the fact that it's these working-class kids who are carrying the load for us, and so I'm glad you focused on that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's hugely important for me, too, when we talk about a person having a choice to do something, I think we need to be very clear about what factors lead up to that choice.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the underlying issues that a lot of people are not registering in regard to women in the military is that although they're not allowed in combat, they are still seeing front lines of violence. They're still experiencing the horror of war. And you bring that up in this book. Talk to us a little bit more.
Yeah, Tish, actually, women are allowed in combat now. So women serving in the U.S. military now have 95% of all military occupations.
Oh, I didn't realize all combat roles.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize that. And prior to women being, you know, quote, allowed in combat, they were designated as combat support. And during that time, they were still doing the same job. Lauren is a soldier who served when women were classified as combat support. And there is, I think, a line in there that talks about how she's doing the same job, but for less pay and with a different title.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking that women weren't exactly allowed combat, because I was thinking they were actually doing it, but it wasn't designated as a woman, you know, a woman being allowed to. That's really interesting. I did not know
that.
Right,
that designation changed recently.
Wow, yeah. Wow. Now, I was really taken by the fact that you portrayed her post-traumatic stress syndrome so subtly. And, you know, a lot of people think people are going to go blow up a building, and you portray it so subtly. Talk to us about that. Did you do a lot of research about that as well?
Yeah, thank you. I did do a lot of research on PTSD. I worked with a professor at Columbia's epidemiology department. And I also write for Women Under Siege, which is an organization that looks at the effects of war on women's lives, things having to do generally with rape. So I did have a lot of experience in talking to people who had been through some of these things and also had experience discussing sort of the science of it with experts in the field.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk to us a little bit more about it? I know some of it has to do with hypervigilance, and sometimes women get into substance abuse.
Yeah, the thing that is unique about women's experiences in the military is that often people come home with compound PTSD because they have compound traumas. So women are highly likely, I guess I don't want to say highly likely, but a higher percentage of women are raped in the military than are in civilian life. And military sexual assault is obviously a huge issue. So this is not something that happens to the protagonist in my book.
Right,
but
right.
In real life, women coming home are often dealing with not only stress from combat, things that they may have seen or done, but the fact that they may have been assaulted by a fellow soldier or an officer. The symptoms are really the same for men and women. There's hypervigilance, nightmares, flashbacks, reliving a violent scenario in your head. These are the kinds of things that a person with PTSD experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was wondering why you didn't want to tackle the subject of sexual assault in this, because it's all over the airwaves. It's being discussed in Congress. Did you make a conscious decision, because it was such a big topic, not to tackle sexual assault?
My decision not to write about sexual assault in the military actually has to do with two things. One, it doesn't represent the majority of women's experiences in the military. It's nearly half, but it's still not the whole picture. And the other reason was because of the literature that we're seeing coming out of the two wars, when women are written about, it always focuses, I think, on sexual assault in some way. And I think this is another way that women are being cast as victims instead of being cast as simply, you know, this is a soldier who's dealing with some issues just like any other soldier. And I really didn't want to contribute to having women violently sexualized, honestly. That was not my intention in writing this book, and I'm glad I made that decision.
Yeah, I actually am, too. I was actually pleasantly surprised that this young woman didn't get assaulted, because I kept waiting for that to be part of her experience. So I'm glad that you didn't do it, too, because I know that isn't everybody's experience. And the way it's being portrayed in this culture, it sounds like it is.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, there's certainly, I think that also detracts from other things that women are dealing with, which is women are going out and killing now in a way that they didn't before because they're going into the army. And so for me, that's much, much more interesting. What is it like for a woman who maybe has a family or children or people that she loves and has nurtured? What is it like for a woman to go out and to murder in war? We've been hearing about that and seeing that depicted continuously with men at war, but nobody seems to be talking about that with women. And I think part of that is because people are uncomfortable with the idea of women having that kind of negative, violent power. And for me, that was really more interesting than talking about, as I said before, talking about women as just being victims.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I also like that you didn't use any kind of overt disabilities. Like, we hear a lot about amputations and head trauma and stuff. And so this young woman had hidden disabilities that you were able to write about incredibly subtly. And you can understand why so many people in her family missed it.
Right. Right. That's the problem in general, I think, of people coming home.
How did you navigate that subtlety for this book?
It's a good question. I'm not sure that I can answer it. I feel that, you know, that was, I guess I navigated that the same way I would writing about any topic that requires finesse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I know how to answer that question.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling it has to do with the fact that you also worked as a reporter. No, seriously.
I guess in a sense it does. I've certainly talked to a wide range of people and covered a wide range of topics.
Uh-huh. You seem to be attracted to the topic of violence, especially kind of subtle violence and small town communities. Is that because that's where you're from, or is it because you know that that's what's permeating the communities that you've lived in and covered?
I'd say that I'm interested in writing about institutional violence, in how different systems cause different types of violence and different types of interpersonal violence. Obviously, we know the violence of war. People don't talk so much about the violence of poverty and how it creates a different kind of pain for people. So I'm interested in that. You know, and I come from upstate. I come from a small community in upstate New York. And really, poverty is a huge issue. Poverty, underemployment, these are huge issues from where I come. I worked as a reporter for a long time covering crime, and so I was privy to the police blotter and what actually makes it into the news and what doesn't. And it's quite a long list of terrible things that, you know, you could be confronted with every single day when you're writing about crime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I found interesting in this book, too, is the fact that your protagonist, Lauren Clay, she was a singer before she became a soldier, a classically trained singer. She sang religious music. Could you talk to us about why you put that aspect into it? I thought that was really fascinating.
Thank you. Yes. Lauren is a classically trained musician. She gives up a scholarship, actually, because she to enlist, because her family's home is going to be foreclosed on. And I wanted to, a couple different reasons. One is people tend to not understand that the military is made up of a whole variety of people with a whole variety of abilities and talents. And being a musician is actually not unusual for people who are entering the military. There's plenty of musicians who enter the military. There's plenty of visual artists. There's plenty of people who are creative in some capacity. So I wanted to make that clear that the military is not some sort of homogenous group of bullet-headed, gung-ho people, but mm-hmm. quite a diverse group of people. The other reason I wanted to have that sacred music in there is as a counterpoint to a lot of the action. So that was also an important choice for me to make, I think. And I guess one of the final reasons, is because I was writing what I know, and I've trained as a classical musician and a classical vocalist. And so in as much as the metaphor of a voice and the metaphor of making a choice between training your voice and training to kill is something essential to the narrative, I also was able to write about it with a little bit of authority on what it's like to be someone who trains as a musician.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Kara Hoffman. We're talking about her new novel, Be Safe, I Love You. It's a novel about the psychological challenges a female soldier faces on returning home from a tour of duty in Iraq. Now, I was really interested also in the relationship between Lauren and her younger brother, Danny. This is a really important aspect of the book. Tell us how you developed that character and why this relationship was so important.
Well, I think Danny is really Lauren's commitment to staying in the world. She loves him and she's cared for him since he was a little boy, and she really wants to see him have a better life than she had or than her family and past generations of her family have had. So the character of Danny is one that's, I think, filled with like a lot of joy. Mm-hmm. And developing, I wanted to also have, again, some reprieve from really dark ideas that are in the book.
Yeah.
And Danny is a very funny character, and he has a really good sense of humor, and their back and forth and their banter and the things that they do, I feel, are kind of classic sibling things that
yeah.
a lot of people can relate to.
No, I loved it because it brought her out of her darkness too. It was a way for her to come back into the, you know, what we could call, I suppose, a normal life. And I also know you have brothers, right?
I do. I have brothers.
Yeah. I do too. I have three brothers. Yeah. So I identified with it.
So you know. Yeah.
I do know. Well, you know what fascinated me a lot about this book was the passage where Danny and Lauren went on a trip together to the wilderness. Talk to us about why you put that in there. It was almost like Lauren was still attracted to that minimalist living that she sort of learned in the Army.
Yes. It's less of a trip and more of Lauren kidnapping Danny.
Yeah, so, exactly. I wasn't going to put it that
it's
way.
It's not really a spoiler to say that. Lauren decides at a certain point, caught up in the things that are upsetting her about being home, that she needs to teach Danny to have more skills. She wants him to be more of a man, and she's appalled by how much time he's spending on social media and things like that. And so decides that she tells him that they're going to go visit their mother, but instead she takes him out into the Arctic wilderness, the Canadian Arctic wilderness. And yeah, the landscape mirrors in many ways the sacred minimalist music of Arvo Pärt, which is the Estonian composer whose music kind of forms the subtext and the backdrop of much of the book.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk to a lot of people in the military who are upset about how wimpy people are who aren't in the military? I mean, we're sitting in front of computers. We're actually even communicating with each other by phone instead of in person. And we say that this is bringing us together. I think it's keeping us apart.
Yeah, that's a whole interesting philosophical idea to get into. Yeah, I think definitely there are people in the military who feel that civilians don't understand the experience and that the civilians are very soft, things like this. And I would say that's a common refrain in many of the people that I've spoken with about the novel.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that you put that in there because I understand that aspect of us becoming quite lazy in front of our computers.
Mm-hmm.
And living on a flat screen.
Living on a screen, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting point that you made in there. I want to ask you, too, you've talked about doing research and talking to a lot of women soldiers. What are some of the issues that they have to deal with when they come home in real life? Are they getting the treatment they want? Are they still invisible? Are they treated respectfully? Well, what are some of their challenges?
Things are improving. I do want to say that things are improving, but not not quickly enough. Of course, one of the biggest challenges is dealing with compound traumas of PTSD related to combat and PTSD related to rape.
Mm-hmm.
And there are not enough people trained to help women with this. Another problem is being, you know, still seen as not having experienced the same kind of things as men. So there's a bias when people see that a woman soldier, they do not think that she's experienced combat. They do not think that she's done the same sort of things. There is a bias in that people tend to imagine women soldiers sitting behind a desk or doing some sort of support work and not going into dangerous places and doing dangerous things and getting killed or killing others. And that, of course, is a huge challenge for women coming back. Their service is often not acknowledged, and it's very, very lonely. I think Helen Benedict has done some of the best writing out there. She's done the best writing out there.
You know what? I had her on the show a few years ago.
Amazing.
Isn't she great?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
She's just amazing. And anybody who wants to know more about that can read Helen's The Lonely Soldier, which is nonfiction, or Sand Queen, which is fiction. And both of those books, I think, give a very, very accurate depiction of what women are going through. And I wrote in my op-ed last week in the New York Times, I covered a couple of issues that women are facing.
Mm-hmm. I was going to bring up that op-ed. It was called The Thing She Carried. It was kind of a riff on Tim O'Brien's classic book, The Things They Carried. That was a great op-ed. And you said you got a lot of attention and a lot of feedback for it. To tell us what some of the women soldiers that you heard from were saying.
It was really overwhelming, actually. My publicist said the day I ran, you know, are you prepared for what's going to happen next? And I said, sure, but I really wasn't. I had 2 full days of answering emails, and it was very emotional hearing from women who've served and hearing from women who read the piece and who related to the piece. And most people were thanking me for writing it, and it was a very emotional day. I felt really good.
Yeah, I know. I don't always look at bylines, but when I was reading the New York Times op-eds, I said, my God, Kara Hoffman wrote this. And I'm having her on the show next week. I thought it was a really good op-ed, too. And people are not writing about this.
No, the point is actually that the way, or one of the points I was making was that the way we understand who soldiers are isn't because people have a soldier in the family. Like the majority of people, right, in the whole country, they're not necessarily coming from military families. The way we understand how to treat people in general, not even just military people, is through reading fictional accounts, right? Seeing mm-hmm. television shows and seeing experiences depicted in fiction. So certainly the way the majority of people understand how to treat soldiers has been because they've read things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for women, that's just not existent. There is no... Or for women soldiers, there is no fiction out there that provides that same, I mean, honestly, societal instruction or chance to have empathy with the person. And so that was my point, was actually that we need to see these stories reflected in art and literature
mm-hmm.
and film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think there's still time, you know. I think we might have to wait for some time to pass and for these wars to finally wrap up for some of the great literature to start coming out of that. It took a while for Vietnam's wonderful literature to start being produced.
I agree. I think it's going to be a generation. I think we're going to see a lot of women who are going to start writing fiction about this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, have you met a lot of vets who are really disappointed by their experience because of the reception they get in this country? Because this country hasn't really paid much attention to these two wars. And in fact, they weren't popular, especially Iraq. And a lot of people now think it was a mistake. Do the women soldiers that you interviewed talk about that?
It's interesting. I think actually, compared to Vietnam, that soldiers coming home now do actually get a lot of thank you for your service and the kind of reverence that maybe they didn't get, at least in the 60s. So I think that soldiers I've spoken to men coming home often have the experience of people appreciating them and thanking them, even if maybe they don't want to be thanked, even if they themselves mm-hmm. now disagree with what they've done or the war.
Mm-hmm.
There is that sense that they did something, you know. And I think, you know, American propaganda has done a good job, actually, of done its job in making people speak in a particular way about the war. As I said before, and maybe I'm just repeating myself, the difference is that women don't experience that same sort of appreciation, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I you know, a lot of people are under the idea of thanking the warriors but not really loving the war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've heard that over and over in this culture. Now, I want to bring up, there's a line in your book that Lauren says, it's her thinking, and the line is, almost every soldier that she knew was waiting to bleed out their life for the contents of a castle. And so that's why I brought up the fact that, you know, a lot of this was disillusioning to, mm-hmm. to a lot of soldiers. They wanted to be heroes, but they really aren't considered heroes because of the dislike of the wars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the idea of calling someone a hero is itself, I think, really limiting, right? Because you say that someone is a hero, and you talk about it in these fairy tale, mythic terms, and that means that you can't actually understand what the person went through.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saying you're a hero and what you've done is heroic, you're really not getting a sense of what actually went on. And so that specific term, actually calling soldiers heroes, I think is actually dangerous.
I understand that, yeah. Now, we only have a couple minutes left. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you might be working on now and what we might expect from you in the future?
Yeah, I'm working on a couple things right now. I guess the book I'm about to hand in is about some very bookish homeless kids living in Athens, Greece, and it takes place in Europe. It takes place in Greece and also in the Pacific Northwest. One of the characters is a woodland firefighter. So it's between those two locations. And also it has to do with the poetry of John Donne.
Wow.
Very happy about that. I'll be handing that in really soon and polishing it up right now and excited to get that going. And I have another book that I'm writing about, another book about a classical musician. And then I'm working on a couple of feminist YA thrillers. But
wow.
I've been writing those under a pseudonym. And I will not tell you the pseudonym. But I will tell you that I'm very, very excited about those projects, even though they may be put in the ghetto of young adult. I feel that they're pretty fantastic.
Wow. Oh, I can't wait to read that one about John Donne and the Greece in the Pacific Northwest. And interesting that you're tying all those things together. Can you give some contact information and your website before we leave?
You can check out my work at www.carahoffman.com.
Kara Hoffman, thank you so much for joining us. Again, her book is called Be Safe, I Love You. Good luck with this book, and thank you so much for writing it.
Thank you, Tish. I really appreciate it. It's wonderful to be on the show.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.